Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the Radio.com app today.
Mr. Trump has magic about him.
This is the greatest country in the world, but we do have some really stupid people.
How can I describe our leaders better than the word stupid?
This guy has magic coming out his ears.
This is the most unethical sham.
So in the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've never known a guy more talented at untangling politics so that anyone can understand.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
We, before we get to politics this afternoon, we have to untangle something else right off the bat, because if you were paying attention to the news yesterday, if you listened to the show, actress Tanya Roberts passed away. She was on Charlie's Angels, thus the theme here. She was a Bond girl, a model. But then what happened later in the day, maybe some people don't know this, is she didn't die. Poor Tanya Roberts. Her publicist came out and said that she had passed away because he had spoken with her, is described as her partner, her boyfriend or live-in partner, and he had said that she had collapsed after walking her dogs and was put on a ventilator, but then she wasn't dead until she did pass away. Yeah, oopsie, last night. So we can confirm this afternoon that Tanya Roberts, in fact, is dead at the age of 65. This reminded me of a story yesterday. I think it was my first trip way back 20-something years ago, probably maybe 21, 22 years ago, to New York City. We were at WTMJ. We were an ABC affiliate, ABC News affiliate, compared to what we have at KMOX, which is CBS. Actually, we were CBS and ABC, but at this point we were ABC, and the morning anchor at the time was a guy named John Belmont, who, interestingly enough, came to WTMJ after he left the network and was a morning guy there. But I was a big fan of John's. I'd never met him before, and I was going to New York for the Belmont Stakes, actually, ironically. But I wanted to see the ABC radio newsroom. So I was on an airplane throughout that morning, and I took a cab to ABC Radio. Never been to New York, you know, first time there. And John greets me at the door, and he says, "Mark," we had never met in person. He goes, "Well, I killed Bob Hope today." And I said, "What?" So lo and behold, and some people might remember this story, because what had happened was same situation. Bob Hope's publicist, well, actually a little different. So somehow the word got out. I don't think it was the publicist that announced it, but somebody thought that Bob Hope was dead. Then I got out there. But think about this in terms of it getting to a national network on a newscast. And by the way, we have an example of something along those lines today as well. So it gets on, it happened to ESPN. It gets on the network news, which is blast across hundreds of stations, you know, throughout the country. And then Bob Hope's publicist finally gets a hold of ABC News and says, "Man, you know, Bob's right here having breakfast in Arizona. He's okay." So Bob Hope was not dead, but that sort of reminded me of that crazy story. All right, while we get started here, I got a couple of things that I want to get to, because we are going to get to Georgia. We're going to get to politics. We're going to get to Josh Hawley, all of that stuff here this afternoon. But I want to maybe start, Dave, let's start with a bit of a public service announcement, because it is cold. And you never know, we might get some precipitation here in the St. Louis area. And I want to warn people and advise them on something that they may not have thought about in the past. Do you remember where this meteorologist is from who did this public service announcement for us?
I can't remember. I can look that up.
Doesn't really matter. I mean, it was in, look it up, but it was in, I'd like to give her credit, it was in a northern climate where they had snow and icicles, and you'll hear the audio here. So there's a young woman who decides to snap a big, long icicle off her, you know, gutters and starts to basically eat it like a popsicle. Well, this meteorologist says, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah, Mark, this was Katie Nicolau. She's a meteorologist in Sioux City, Iowa.
Sioux City, Iowa. Here we go, Katie.
Yes. Yes.
Dave, please don't. Hold on. Stop the tape. That sounded like a porno or something like that. Are you sure that was the right clip?
I'm very sure that was the right clip.
Okay, so she's just eating a popsicle, or a, not a popsicle, but an icicle here, okay? All right, just to make sure. I was not wanting to get fined by the FCC or anything. Let's hear it again here.
Please don't do that. I'm a meteorologist. I should know. When icicles form, it's from water that melts off of your roof and runs down the side of a building. Well, here's the thing. You know what else is on your roof? Bird poop. A lot of it. And that water picks it up and freezes it in the ice. You're eating poop.
I don't think I can argue with her. Can we argue with her on that? Think about it. That, I think the message is on target here this
You're
afternoon,
poop.
Right, Dave? Exactly.
It's something
All right,
you really never really think about, but it's kind of gross now that I'm really thinking about that one too much. So
yep.
It's something not to do with the kids this winter.
Yeah, because, you know, with the snow, my daughter likes doing that. She knows the rule, don't eat yellow snow. I think the snow is probably okay, but yeah, the icicles, I never really thought about that. Anyway, on to some other things here this afternoon. I found this very interesting. Now, I think if you've been listening, you understand that I think the whole nonsense with challenging the election tomorrow is just utterly ridiculous. And beyond that, there is no constitutional process for it. That's one of the problems. And Josh Hawley, who for now is the official constitutional law expert of the Mark Reardon Show, we may have to examine that. He knows better. He clerked for John Roberts. He knows there's not a constitutional path. He knows that more than anyone. And so does Ted Cruz. That's one of the issues that I have with this whole narrative. Now, I get that some of you think that this election was stolen without proof. And I get that the president thinks that the election was stolen. Josh Hawley knows that the election wasn't stolen. He's too smart to not know that. But he's a politician. But let's go back to Lou Dobbs. This made me laugh. Lou Dobbs, you know, you find out things over the course of time about people that maybe you liked in the past, and then you really have to question how much of their soul they've sold. Lou Dobbs might be one of them. So listen, just pay attention to what he says here and think about it for a second.
8 weeks from the election, and we still don't have verifiable, tangible support for the crimes that everyone knows were committed. That is defrauding other citizens who voted with fraudulent votes. We know that's the case in Nevada. We know it's the case in Pennsylvania and a number of other states. But we have had a devil of a time finding actual proof.
We know it's the case. We know what happened. We know that why can't we find proof? He asked that to Ed Rollins last night. Why is there no proof, Ed? Well, Lou, I think the answer to that is you answered it for yourself. It's rhetorical. There is no proof of massive election fraud. And anything that has been alleged has been debunked pretty easily. So that brings us to Senator Hawley. And I know what he's doing. I think people know what he's doing. You do have very, very loyal people to the president that are not going to accept that Joe Biden won. Why will they feel that way? Because they've been told that by the president, by Josh Hawley and others. But here's what he said last night.
What I'm trying to do, Brett, is to raise the concerns that my constituents have all over Missouri. I have heard from people like I've never heard before over the last month about this election. They have major, major concerns about the integrity, the fairness of this election, and they expect me to stand up and to raise those concerns. And this is the only forum I have to do it. This is the forum that the Constitution and the statutes provide, and they also want action. They want an investigation into these irregularities. They want new election laws to make sure that our elections are secure going forward. This is my chance to stand up and speak for them, and somebody has got to take their concerns seriously and speak up, and that's what I'm going to do.
All right, so give Brett Baer credit here, because he has not sold his soul. He presses Josh Hawley.
I just want to pin you down on what you're trying to do. You know, are you trying to say that as of January 20th, that President Trump will be president?
Well, Brett, that depends on what happens on Wednesday. I mean, this is why we have the debate.
No, it doesn't. This is why we have the votes. I mean, the states, by the Constitution, say they certify the election. They did certify it. By the Constitution, Congress doesn't have the right to overturn the certification, at least as most
All right, let's stop it there. All right, they don't. That's an important point here, and this is where I wish that Senator Hawley would be honest with people, and I'll ask him this the next time he comes on the show. He knows this. He knows the Constitution. Doesn't matter to him, doesn't matter to Ted Cruz, but he knows that this is not, there's no constitutional path for him with this. You can make new election laws. He's a senator. He can introduce investigations in the Senate when you have the majority. All those things are still possible, but you can't overturn the election, which is, I think, what Brett Baer's trying to say here.
Well, Congress is directed under the 12th Amendment to count the electoral votes. There's a statute that dates back to the 19th century, that says that there is a right to object, there's a right to be heard, and there's also a certification
right,
process.
Right, that's from 1876, Senator, and it's right. the Tilden-Hayes race, in which there were three states that did not certify their electors. So Congress was left to come up with this system, this commission, that eventually got to negotiate a grand bargain.
All right, so basically he's saying, look, in that particular case, it's different because these states have already certified the results. In that case, there were three states that hadn't. So they go on here a little bit.
But now all of the states have certified their elections as of December 14th. So it doesn't, by constitutional ways, open a door to Congress to overturn that, does it?
Well, no, I'm talking about the statute, Brett. There's a statute that says, that governs what Congress does on January the 6th, and it says that we have a vote of certification and that we have the opportunity to debate the results, to certify the results. We count them and then we certify. And my point is, this is my only opportunity during this process to raise an objection and to be heard. I don't have standing to file lawsuits. I'm not a prosecutor anymore. I used to be, but I'm not anymore. I can't investigate claims of voter fraud on my own, but I do have a responsibility in this joint session of Congress to either say I've got no problem with it, or I do have a problem with it. And my constituents expect
right, but don't
me,
you have
and they're
a responsibility
right, to say I have
to your
a problem.
Constituents? Don't you have a responsibility to tell them that it's not going to be President Trump as of January 21st as well?
Well, Brett, I'm trying to do something more than just that.
I think so.
I mean, this is about the integrity of our elections.
Well, I think you have to be honest with, let me be honest with those of you who think that Joe Biden's not going to be president. He is. And it's going to be certified tomorrow, and there is no path to change that. And the Lynn Woods stuff, good Lord, that's still out there. Because if you want the conspiracy, I have to share it just because this is a doozy. Lynn Wood is out there still saying that Chief Justice John Roberts and a multitude of powerful individuals worldwide are being blackmailed in a horrendous scheme involving rape and murder of children captured on videotape. This is the guy who Josh Hawley used to clerk for. I'd like to ask him about this, if the office is listening here this afternoon. I have the keys to the files containing the videos. I've also shared this information. I have shared, this is Lynn Wood, I've shared with several individuals the truth. I will be speaking to you. Killing me will not prevent the truth. I think he's still alive. Tanya Roberts is not, but Lynn Wood is still alive today. Will not prevent the truth from being revealed. It will only trigger release by many others. So I'm waiting for the Kraken to be released by Lynn Wood, but we'll watch for the certification. And the whole thing that's getting buried here, I've spent 15 minutes talking about all this stuff, and I haven't mentioned what should be the priority today, and that's Georgia. And I hope I'm wrong, and I'm going to tell you that I'm wrong on all these predictions. My gut tells me both Democrats are going to win this thing. Maybe I'm playing a little reverse psychology. 217 at KMOX. We have a lot to get to this afternoon. There's a new study that suggests that transgender women maintain an athletic advantage over their cisgender peers even after being on hormone therapy. Go figure. That's a shocking study. We'll get to that here this afternoon and a whole lot more on KMOX.
The Mark Reardon Show, sponsored by Cantor Injury Law on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Well, We're going to get you prepped for the St. Louis County Council meeting tonight, which could be very, very interesting. St. Louis County Councilman Tim Fitch is going to join us in the next hour. We are expecting fireworks over leadership positions. Jazz Shaw, who's one of my favorite bloggers over at Hot Air, is going to join us at 2:35 talking about Georgia. And also this afternoon, I want to take a look back. A friend of mine, a guy I used to work with in Milwaukee, Gino Salamon, who is a big entertainment reporter and correspondent, also a member of the Critics' Choice Association. He knew Don Wells pretty well from Gilligan's Island, and I know that he shared some thoughts on Twitter last week, and I wanted to have Gino on to talk about Don Wells, a very important part of my childhood. The other thing that's happening this afternoon as we wait for State Rep. Mary Elizabeth Coleman to join me here this afternoon is there are new lockdown restrictions in England to combat the spread of the new variant of the coronavirus. And this thing is, it's getting real bad in England, but I also think that they've had lockdowns before, so we'll ask CBS News correspondent Pamela Falk for some details on that. And I don't want to spend like too much time on this here this afternoon, so we scare people, and I think I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, but there's another variant out there, unfortunately, and this one is from South Africa, and it's sort of, at this point, again, I don't like to get too far ahead of this, it does feel like it might be some steps above what's happening in England. The experts say number of additional mutations, which are concerning, et cetera. And what they don't know is how much this will be affected by the vaccine, et cetera. But just buckle up for that. So then the question becomes, what do we do then? If the South African strain is as bad as what they're now predicting, what does that hold? So we'll talk about that a little bit later this afternoon. One of our roundtable veterans now, I feel like she's been on the show for half a year, State Rep. Mary Elizabeth Coleman is with me this afternoon. We have a new legislative session starting in Jefferson City. How are you this afternoon? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. I'm actually talking to you from my new office, moving in furniture and chairs. So happy to be getting settled in for the coming session.
Nice. So when you say new office, is the, you get a brand new level of office because of seniority? Isn't that sometimes how it works?
That's exactly it. So the House and the Senate are seniority-based bodies, and every year you get a new office, and if you're a low man on the totem pole like I am as a freshman, you could even get kicked out of your office. So I lost my office and got put into the pool, and then now I'm in a new space, which actually is really lovely and beautiful, and I'm happy to be serving in Jeff City from a closet. It doesn't really matter, you know?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's going to go on. So Dave Schatz is going to come on tomorrow, I think, and talk about the gas tax proposal. He wants to increase the gas tax by 2 cents for 5 years. So what's on your radar looking forward in this session that will be a priority?
Yeah, so children's welfare has got to be at the top of any and everybody's list. The House Republican Caucus had a winter meeting looking forward to the session to talk about what our priorities would be, and our child welfare system is in need of some significant work, and that's my personal top priority as well as the top priority of the caucus. We're obviously focused on the pandemic response, making sure that a lot of the rules and regulations that have been rolled back to allow people to continue to work, whether that's updates to the Sunshine Law to make sure that people can hold remote meetings with meaningful public participation and transparency, or whether it's allowing cocktails to go, kind of a wide range of those executive orders that have come about because of the pandemic, looking at seeing which of those should be made permanent, which ones should be ongoing basis. We are looking at, some of the common themes that we were elected to do, protecting the right to life, protecting the Second Amendment, making sure that we're a low tax state. Those are really the priorities of the Republican House Caucus and certainly my own as well.
Does the legislature have any kind of oversight or influence when it comes to the rollout of the vaccines?
Well, not specifically. There is a executive level committee that was put together with the Department of Health and Human Services that has worked on what those priorities are in conjunction with the Centers for Disease Control, making sure that we get frontline workers, the elderly, and kind of moving through that process. So the state legislature certainly has oversight as far as the budget. The House is where the budget for the entire state originates and comes from, and that's a significant portion of our work. So we'll have a say in making sure that those efforts are funded and that the rollout is going as planned. But we don't directly contribute to those types of decisions about who gets vaccinated when and how that is distributed.
You know, I've long been a fan of school choice and charter schools. I think it's just terrible and sad what many Democrat urban lawmakers, and I can offer a lot of examples of Democrat urban lawmakers, even in St. Louis, who have supported school choice, but not enough to make a difference. But here we have a situation coming off for being in the middle of the pandemic with education being a concern. Is this something that can actually get momentum to get charters in smaller cities across the state?
Well, I certainly hope so. I've been a big proponent of them as well. The education that a child receives in our state should not be based on their zip code. There are situations where neighboring school districts do one thing particularly well, and saying other children can't attend, even though that school best meets their needs and the parents feel that's the right choice, has never made a lot of sense to me. So I think we're going to see progress, hopefully, on charter expansion. Maybe we'll see at education savings accounts, expanded, looking at maybe even open enrollment. So doing things that are creative. You know, we have districts that are side by side having vastly different responses to the pandemic. Some are doing all online virtual, and you don't have an in-person option for students that really need that. Others are only in person and don't have a really accessible way to be able to go to school online if there's an underlying health condition or a reason that family is concerned and needing to isolate. And so all of that has really opened up everybody's eyes to saying one size doesn't really fit all. And if we're going to be able to compete and our kids are going to be able to have access to the best education for their unique needs, we really have to look at school choice and look at how we're doing these things. We have some of our school districts in the state that are getting the very most amount of money for decades are still the least performing. And those parents would do anything to get their kids into one of the magnets or the charter schools or into a private school. It doesn't make sense.
Did you ever know
that cheaper? Right?
Yeah, it doesn't. You know, one of the examples.
You get a better outcome. I can't understand why we don't do these things.
One of the examples that I often use for, you know, education, and this is a little off the mark for charter school and choices. I don't know if you ever got to know Tiffany Anderson, who was the superintendent in Jennings for a while, and she got, stolen away for Topeka, Kansas. But her leadership made a difference in a very impoverished district, and she was someone who went out every morning and helped with crossing guard duties to see the students, to talk to them, to see what they were going through. I was out there with her a couple of times, and I saw kids, you know, bringing pillows to school, which indicated that, you know, they may have slept not necessarily in their own bed if they had a bed. So this whole education topic really, I think, needs more focus, especially when you consider the crime situation in St. Louis, which I don't think you can make a case that poverty and crime are not related.
Absolutely. And you can't make any sort of argument either that what happens in St. Louis doesn't affect outstate. The truth is that St. Louis is the economic engine of the state, and Jefferson City has to do a good job of making sure that the city is getting the resources that they need. And that, frankly, we're doing everything we can when local leaders are unwilling or unable to address the problem. You have some really great people like Jimmy Edwards, who's been working closely. I think, Leia Crewson as well, trying to bring in state resources, bring in federal resources. But we don't have any plan at all in St. Louis County. We're not having the effect that we wish we would be seeing in St. Louis City, and we have got to get the crime rates under control. You almost get numb to the number of deaths that we've had when they start to get quite so high. I think that, were you running on Twitter your COVID count versus murder count in the city of St. Louis?
And I haven't addressed that because in the end, COVID did outpace murders, but not by a whole lot. And, you know, the reason I illustrated that was people gave me a lot of grief because they thought it was a false comparison. But I was trying to highlight the attention that's given to COVID versus the violence in the city of St. Louis. And I think that's kind of embarrassing. And, you know, because the mayor and they're all afraid to alienate people in certain demographics, and nothing really gets fixed. State Rep. Mary Elizabeth Coleman, I'm out of time. We'll catch you soon back on the roundtable. Enjoy decorating the new office. I hope Baby Yoda is a part of the new office. Baby Yoda is part of my office here. Yeah, find a Baby Yoda. It's 2:30 at KMOX. We'll come back here with Jazz Shaw from Hot Air talking about Georgia and what's going on with Josh Hawley and all the stuff like that. And we're back with more after the news on KMOX.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Well, big day, obviously, in Georgia. And boy, I don't have a good gut check on this, although I'm always wrong, so that might be good for Republicans. By the way, somebody hit me up on Twitter after hearing the monologue this afternoon and my criticism of the official constitutional law expert of the Mark Reardon Show, who happens to be Josh Hawley, the title perhaps in a little jeopardy. It's a bigger title than United States Senator. He's admitted that before. This guy says, look, Josh Hawley didn't quite back up your diatribe. Sounds like he knows the law and explained it exactly, or explained exactly why he's doing it. I know why he's doing it. He's doing it because he's going to run for president and he's trying to score political points. He knows that there is no constitutional path to do this. He's aware of that. Ted Cruz knows that. And then the guy says, you sounded kind of arrogant. Dave, me? Can you believe that allegation?
I just don't put those two words together with you, Mark. There's
that
just no way.
Is shocking. It is shocking. Hey, Jazz Shaw's back with us this afternoon from hotair.com. I love his work. He was with us before the holidays, and he's written about Georgia and some of the stuff that's going on. Jazz, how are you? Happy New Year.
Same to you, Mark. Glad to be with you guys. Not the best of times right now for conservatives, but hey, we made it through 2020 at least, right?
I think so. But here's the thing. I think I'm a conservative. You think you're a conservative. I'm being told time and time again these days, I am not a conservative because I don't support the election fraud nonsense.
I've gotten a fair amount of that. But the fact is, I do support some of the individual allegations of election fraud. We've written about it on our site.
As do I. Right.
It absolutely does happen. But to... And we have, just so your listeners are aware, we have a race up in the 22nd district in New York State, which still has not been called. At this date in January, it hasn't been called. It's still up in the air. Claudia Tenney is trying to take her seat back from a guy named Brindisi in New York 22. And it's currently sitting at a difference of 30 votes. And the same Democrat-appointed judge is now going over yet another pile of ballots. You know, but they found like 3 votes by dead people already that got thrown out, and 2 people have been charged. So, yeah, some voter fraud does happen. Was there enough widespread to tip the entire presidential election? That's a big charge. You got a big charge like that, you got to bring big data. And I don't think that's been done.
Well, and, you know, I think you wrote about this yesterday, Jess. Let's say, and I listened, by the way, I listened to the entire phone call with the Georgia Secretary of State because I do think it was misrepresented a little bit in the media. But in that call, I mean, let's say that somehow the president's right, there was enough fraud to overturn. He wasn't, but my case that I've made is that he wasn't asking Raffensperger to, you know, manufacture votes. He, in his heart of hearts, believes that he won Georgia. He believes he won the race. He's saying all you have to do is expose the fraud that's there. Now, Raffensperger says there's not enough there. But even if that were to happen, let's say magically Georgia shows enough fraud to overturn the state, that doesn't give the president the White House.
No, there's 2 sides to that. I wrote about it, and I don't think the president intended to threaten him. I just thought it was a very unartful choice of words.
Yeah.
Because
right. No, I don't.
It opened the door for the press to go, oh, he's threatening him with prosecution. He's going to lock him up or whatever if you don't overturn the election. But, yeah, the other side of that, like you said, is let's say we gave Trump Georgia. Well, then he has to get Pennsylvania and one more state, the only one on the table, and I'm putting on the table in scare quotes, would be Michigan. You know, how are you going to get there before next week? You know, I'm sorry, I just don't see it. So,
yeah, no.
Yeah, I think the phone call was perhaps with the right intentions, because I do believe the president thinks he won the election, but the evidence just hasn't been presented enough to make the case. And as I said in the summary of that piece that you're talking about, you know, right now the president needs to be focusing on getting at least one of the seats in Georgia in the Senate. Otherwise, the disaster is compounded.
Well, that was my case from the day after the election. I think even when you and I spoke a few weeks ago, I said, look, my concern here is that this is creating diversions that are going to cost the Republicans potential seats in the Senate. And now we have the balance in limbo. Now, look, this could be a split decision tonight. I'm not as dialed into what the people of Georgia feel. The numbers that I'm seeing are quite staggering with people participating. But obviously, the conventional wisdom is the people who cast the ballots ahead of time were maybe going to lean Democrat. And then as the votes come in and counted tonight from people who go in person, it's going to help the Republican candidates. Do you have a gut check? I don't have a positive gut check, but I mean, who knows what's going to happen?
I have a gut check, but I have, like you, I have nothing to back it up, because the polling across the entire 2020 election was just a pile of hot garbage. And we already know that. So how much am I believing the current polling out of Georgia? Well, as again, I know it's trite to say it, but it always comes down to turnout. It's like, oh, there's been a, you know, a huge amount of black voter turnout. And then somebody else says, but the Republicans raised more money and we've got these numbers and these numbers. I could see a split decision. I could see Warnock going down just because he has so much baggage. And I think the Republicans have done a good job of putting that out there. And he's just said some really offensive things. It's like, yeah, is that who you want voting? The other race, I'm not entirely sure about. Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked, but I'll take a split decision right now. Honestly, I will.
Right. Well, that would be, yeah, that might be a victory. It seems to be just looking from afar, and this is often the case with some of these political races, that all four of these candidates seem terrible to me. But, you know, what do I know?
I don't know. I like Kelly Loeffler. I think she's a good campaigner. But then again, at the same time, I don't live in Georgia. I've been to Georgia, but I've never lived there. I don't know what people down there think about her. Ossoff is, he just seems, pardon me using the word, he seems sleazy to me. You know, he's like this trust fund kid, and he just feels
that
entitled. You know, and it's like, I come from a family with enough money, and you need to put me in the Senate. You know, that's really the vibe I get off of him. But for all I know, if you're somebody who lives down there and knows them, maybe that's a common thing. I'm kind of with you. I really don't have a vibe on it. I think it's going to be really close. I don't think we're going to know tonight. You know, there's no chance.
He reminds me of Beto, though, doesn't that? He sort of has that same, throws off that same vibe as Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah, but the thing that scares me about Ossoff is he's a little more competent than Beto. He's kind of polished. He's got his patter down. He obviously has hired some good advisors. He has some good buzzwords. Beto is just like, well, I'm in the middle of this race, but you know what? I think I'm going to do a Bob Dylan thing, and I'm just going to hop on a bus and go on a tour to go find the real America. And when I come back, you're all going to elect me. And I was watching that, and I was just like, oh, dude, you're so lost. You know?
Absolutely. Jazz Shaw from Hot Air with me this afternoon. Where are you right now? I know you maybe haven't written as much on the site as some of the other folks on the topic of the coronavirus and where we are right now with COVID, but I saw there was another post, I think Alec Pundit wrote about this other, I hadn't heard about this today, this strain from South Africa that might even be more potentially concerning than the one in England. I mean, we seemingly can't get out of this thing.
Yeah, I read a piece post about that. I didn't write it. I've written plenty about the virus and all this stuff, but not that particular one. But yeah, the South African one, as I understand it, the British one, every evaluation we've seen so far is that the virus will be, or the vaccine will be equally effective against the British one. But the British one isn't more deadly. You're not more likely to die of it. It just jumps faster and more easily. So it can spread faster, which is, of course, a concern. The problem with the South African one is the initial tests seem to show it has, and just full disclosure, I'm not a doctor. I'm going by what medical authorities say. It's mutated and developed a couple of extra spikes on the virus that the current vaccine might not be as prepared to handle. So more of it could get through to cells. So the effectiveness rate could drop significantly. And if that happens, you've got a bunch of people who are vaccinated thinking, oh, I'm good to go now, you know, when they're going back to work and doing their thing. And that South African strain jumps up and suddenly it's like, whoa, I was vaccinated and now I've got COVID. You know, so that's an alarming thing.
And I'm looking at a, you know, LA Times just tweets out 74,000 new coronavirus cases in California, 11% more than the last record number logged in a single day, where they have lockdowns and they have restrictions and they have mask mandates, and it doesn't seem to be, you know, throwing it off at all. Jazz Shaw from Hot Air, I remain a fan, and I appreciate coming on KMOX this afternoon talking about all this stuff in Georgia. We'll have you back soon.
Anytime, my friend. Thanks for having me.
246, something else that just cleared that I wanted to share with folks who have been, Dave, you might be a little too young for the name Jerry Berger. If I say Jerry Berger, does that mean anything to you?
I know the name, absolutely.
Yeah. So he was a Post-Dispatch columnist, media guy. I can't remember if Jerry was at the Globe Democrat too. He died today. Joe Holloman reporting that Jerry Berger died in Florida at the age of 87. He was a character, and he was a fan of this show. I know that because he reached out from time to time, but I had not probably seen Jerry in maybe 7 or 8 years, maybe even longer than that. Jerry Berger dead at the age of 87. And Holloman put, and this is a St. Louis thing, if you know, because he was a babe. He was a babe guy. R.I.P. babe. When he'd see it, hey, babe. Jerry Berger, dead at the age of 87. It's 247.
Weekday mornings at 8:30, Charlie Brennan and Amy Marks-Kors provide perspective on KMOX and KMOX.com.
You know, when, excuse me, still no mic mute button here at home. When Jazz was on a few minutes ago, I didn't ask him about this story that he wrote about, another one on hotair.com, which, by the way, for those of you who do like sane conservative viewpoint, this is where you're going to find it. They do a great job over there. Michelle Malkin started that site many, many years ago. So you have this guy in Wisconsin, did you hear, who spoiled the 500, more than 500 doses of the COVID vaccine. Now, he's been arrested and charged with some, you know, low-level crimes for this. They're trying to see if they can hit him with other things. This guy's name is Steven Brandenburg. He's 46 years old. Now, he was described as a Wisconsin hospital worker who confessed to spoiling those doses of the vaccine. But he isn't just a worker at the hospital. He's a pharmacist who works, or now, as the case may be, worked, past tense, for the Advocate Aurora Health System. And this was, today is, what day is this? I have no idea. Is today Tuesday? Dave, can you confirm?
It is Tuesday, Mark.
Tuesday, I think today is Tuesday. So on Sunday, he was held on a $10,000 bond. I think maybe it was Monday. But this was not just like a weird random act. He's described as a conspiracy theorist who thinks he was helping out the public by destroying the vaccines. He claimed the drugs are not safe. Here's the NBC story. A pharmacist accused of trying to destroy hundreds of doses of coronavirus vaccine is allegedly a conspiracy theorist who believed the medication wasn't safe. Brandenburg is, quote, admitted conspiracy theorist. He told investigators he believed that the COVID-19 vaccine was not safe for people, could harm them and change their DNA. He admitted that this was an intentional act. Now, look, you have people involved in conspiracy theories all the time. I believe me, I can show you my emails and my tweet. Might run responses on Twitter, but typically you wouldn't think the guy who's kind of whacked out about the vaccine was a pharmacist like this guy. So that's one of the weird things. You can, you know, maybe expect some folks out there that are into weird conspiracy theories. Jazz wrote about this. You usually say you tend to picture people living in their mom's basement and pouring through Reddit threads, but this guy was not uneducated. You know, he's got a doctor of pharmacy degree. That's not quite as impressive as Jill Biden, but it's still a, you know, a PharmD degree, usually requiring 4 years of postgraduate work. And his specialty is in medicine. So he's got all kinds of education. He still fell down the rabbit hole, which is kind of interesting. So I, one thing I should say, though, is Jazz even admitted he's kind of a UFO guy. So he likes, but UFOs are real. They're just unidentified flying objects. We don't know if, in fact, there are aliens. I'd like to think there's aliens. I would. I would like to think there's aliens. All right, there is an update this afternoon on Bean Dad. I want to get to that. Bean Dad was a kind of a ridiculous thing that started trending over the weekend. If you're not familiar with that, we'll get into it, because this guy, John Roderick, who does a, I didn't know who he was. He's a musician, described as a musician, and also does a podcast with Ken Jennings of Jeopardy fame. He did something on Twitter that people got all bent out of shape over. And yesterday I talked about this. Well, now the guy's apologized, and I think that's ridiculous for apologizing. And then there's another – this will tie in with another good cancel culture story, because there is a song out by Blake Shelton. Dave, I think you can roll a little of this song here, called Minimum Wage. And he dropped it on New Year's Eve, and I guess it's – look, you hear a little bit of the song here. Here you go. Minimum wage. All right, so he talks about roofing houses during the summers as a teenager and all this other stuff, and then how his life has changed, and then people are criticizing him because he's a rich, you know, country celebrity. But there's a little bit of nuance to this, and Ronnie Dunn from Brooks and Dunn has gotten involved and defended Blake Shelton. I might also get to, you know who actually talks? Who knew? You know the guy who plays Bean, Rowan Atkinson? Actor, I guess, actor, comedian? I think he's kind of a big deal in England. I've never liked his... liked his movies. He was Mr. Bean. We have Bean Boy, and now we have Mr. Bean. He gave a great interview offering his opinion on cancel culture and comparing it to a medieval mob. And I love that. So we might get to that here after the top of the hour as well. Tim Fitch is going to join me at 3:20. And then Gino Salamone from Milwaukee. He's an entertainment reporter. He's a fellow film critic with the Critics' Choice Association. He had a great friendship with Don Wells, who passed away last week. He's going to share some stories coming up. 3:35 on KMOX. The news is coming up next. Then we have much more to go. One of the other stories today is England on a lockdown, their third lockdown of the coronavirus. CBS News correspondent Pamela Falk is going to fill us in on that coming up at 4:20. We also have Kevin Wheeler on sports and an audio cut of the day in about 1 hour on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.